Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies? What the fuck, Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How's it going? Today's an exciting show. It's another comedian doubleheader. Both of these guys have been on before. They're back because I like talking to both of them. Louis Katz is a comedian who was working with me pretty regularly right before the launch of WTF in 2009. He's been on the show several times since then, including a full-length episode in 2019 and a live episode back in 2010. And he's releasing a new comedy special on his YouTube channel tonight. Tonight, Louis Katz is releasing a special. I think he's a very funny guy. I think you'll enjoy it. And the other guy who's on today is Doug Stanhope. And Doug has been coming on since the very beginning. Episode 22, episode 204, episode 712. Now, he's got a movie coming out called The Road Dog, capturing the life of a mid-level road comic, a journeyman, a comedy troubadour out there living the life. And I think they got a lot of things right. It was nice talking to Doug and Louie, and you'll get to enjoy that shortly. I will be in Boston at the TD Garden for Comics Come Home on Saturday, November 4th. Denver, Colorado, I'll be at the Comedy Works South for four shows, November 17th and 18th. And Los Angeles, I'm at Dynasty Typewriter on December 1st, 13th, 28th. I'm at the Elysian on December 6th. 5th, 22nd, and Largo again on December 12th and January 9th. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for tickets. That's a lot of comedy I'm doing. I did some comedy last night and I was like, yeah, I can't get too polished. I got to keep it rough. Got to figure out how to, there's some bits I need to get tight, but man, that's a lot of comedy. But it's what I do, man. It's who I am, man. So look, the other day, I was talking to you about the Bellingham show and about seeing that family of kids. And I've got some emails and, you know, and look, you know, I've rethought it a little bit. Again, I don't know if obviously it's up to a parent unless it's absolutely no children allowed kind of thing. But I would have been pretty excited probably to see me if I were a young me. I like seeing grown-up stuff. So, there's wiggle room around it in terms of age. But I got some emails. Hey, Mark, my wife and I have seen you live in Portland, Oregon multiple times. We've seen all your specials. We have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. We talk to our kids a lot about feelings, emotions, and how to express them and process them in a healthy way. No, we're not therapists. I think it's good for kids to see adults talk openly about their feelings, especially the ones that are hard to talk about. You do that a lot, and you come from a genuine place. You talk about real feelings, real experiences, your real struggles in processing them, and you manage to make it hilarious. Some comics use their struggles as sort of a prop in their comedy or a means to an end. He quotes, I used to be an alcoholic. Here's some funny stuff that happened. I wouldn't want my 9 to 12-year-old seeing that. It's fine, it can be funny, but it's flippant. You talk about serious shit and make it hilarious without downplaying the struggle or the depth of the emotion. Very few comics can do that. You, Bamford, Chappelle, Roy Wood Jr., Tom Winson. Don't worry, I won't be bringing our kids to your shows anytime soon, even if they were older, because I wouldn't want to cause you stress, but you can understand why parents would make that choice. Thank you for everything, Mark. Matthew. All right. Well, I get that, but still, there's something, because I don't have kids. Here's another one from another Matt. You have values, you're principled, and kids can handle it. Thanks for all your work. Yeah, but okay. Let's see what this one says. Almost 20 years ago, I brought my 13-year-old to Caroline's. It was called the New York Comedy Festival, and John Heffron was performing, and we'd come from New Hampshire to a family gathering. We'd watched Last Comic Standing, and I knew he was a clean comic. They warned us at the door, but we went in anyways. Russ Meneve opened. He was really dirty. Then Marina Franklin came on, and she kept yelling, cock. I felt so embarrassed. My son laughed, but I still felt guilty. I will be at Comics Come Home with my other son, who is an adult. Looking forward to it. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Maggie. Here's another one. Dear Mr. Marin, my wife and I brought our 13-year-old twin sons to the Bellingham show. We had a great time. Thank you. With the exceptions of porn and extreme representations of violence, my wife and I decided to let our sons watch R-rated material when they turn 10, especially comedy. Laughter is very important. As they're watching, they ask us questions. The material generates a dialogue, and when they go out in the world and hear crazy, misinformed stuff from their peers, our sons are prepared to process it. Most importantly, they're prepared and comfortable to come talk to us. Maybe we're wrong, but I want to be the one explaining life's sick ironies to my sons. Parenting is a mind-boggling tapestry of mistakes, but we've found love, structure, honesty, and making sure no one goes to bed angry has been serving our family well. That being said, 9 years old might be a little young. You handled it well. Thanks so much and take care. Eric, Andrea, John, and Charles. Okay. The other thing I've been realizing, and I've told this story before, and I recently talked about it again because I realized that, you know, there's this idea, and I think I might have mentioned it before, that, you know, kids can only understand what they understand. If they have no context for something, or they, you know, have no idea what you're really talking about, they just don't understand it. And that's the end of it. And I think that's probably true. And I think that I should recalibrate how I consider children at my shows. Look, I don't want them sitting up front because it is going to make me self-conscious because I'm a dirty, talking old man. And some of the ideas that I talk about are mostly psychological or, you know, sexual. It's a lot. But I get what they're saying, and I also get my understanding. I get that they think that it's okay to provoke conversation and explain. And I also think that kids only understand what they understand. Because I thought about it again when I was very young. I mean, I don't even know, 10 or 11 probably. My grandparents were visiting our family in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I guess my mother and father wanted a day off from the kids and told my grandparents to take us to the movies. And they took us to see Deliverance, not knowing what Deliverance was. Now, obviously, it's sexually violent. It's violent. Some gnarly stuff in there. A man gets raped by, hill people. Now, I knew that, and I remember when I told this story, I remembered Deliverance from when I was a kid. And I saw it again later in life, not too long ago. And I was able to sort of isolate what my child mind did not remember. And it's kind of interesting, and I think provocative, that, look, when Ned Beatty's character gets raped, when I was a kid, I just remember squeal like a pig. I remember him, you know, being man, you know, kind of pushed around in the mud in his underpants. But that was really all I remembered. And when I watched as an adult, I was surprised at how graphic that violent rape was of that man, that character. Like, it lingers on it. It's clear what's happening. And it's profoundly disturbing. But my child brain had no context for what was going on there. Like, I remember the guy in his underwear being bullied and being made to squeal like a pig. I don't remember that guy raping him, which they clearly show. Now, oddly, what did scar my mind from when I was a child, and as an adult, it does not have the same effect on me, was two things. When Burt Reynolds shoots an arrow into that guy while he's raping the Ned Beatty character, and it, you know, it goes right through him, and it sticks, the arrow comes right through his heart and sticks out of his chest as the guy dies. I remember the expression on his face. I remember that arrow sticking out of his heart. And that stayed. That burned in. That was horrific. I also remember Burt Reynolds on the boat after they capsized and he smashed his leg. And there was just like a flank of meat hanging out of his ripped wetsuit and a bone sticking out. I remember that more than anything. Just this piece of leg that was supposed to be on the inside, on the outside. Just, it looks, as an adult, it looks like a big hunk of meat. But as a kid, I'm like, oh my God, it's just, his whole leg is sticking out and it's muscles. It was horrific. And I remember that. And I remember them finding the body of the guy that fell off and drowned, all tangled up in the driftwood or whatever. So, oddly, without any context, the sexual violence did not really register in my childhood brain. But the violence not only registered, terrified me, and stayed there. So that's interesting. I guess that ultimately, you know, until you're sexually awake or informed or experienced or of age to understand it, it's not really going to land. But, you know, violence is something we know from the moment we're conscious, in a way, sadly. I don't know what that all means. I'm obviously not going to be violently raping any men on stage or committing acts of violence. And maybe I should just relax about, you know, occasionally having a teenager at my show or someone a little younger, and just rest on the idea that, like, well, they're not going to know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, so Louis Katz, love this guy. He asked me to do like a lead-in for his special, where I guess I set the tone, which was to be kind of dismissive and sarcastic about Louis's career in stand-up. But I was happy to have him on, and the special's funny, and I love talking to him. That special, Louis Katz, Present Tense, premieres tonight, October 19th, on his YouTube channel. Go subscribe to his channel, Louis Katz Comedy. So this is me and my old pal, Louis Katz. Sometimes I wish I paid more attention in school, or in some cases, any attention at all. There are probably a lot of things I could have gotten more out of, like literature, and now it's probably not in the cards to go back to school and study the classics. But luckily for us, there's a new podcast called The Foxed Page that dives deep into the best books of all time. This is basically like the best possible college English class, but more relaxed and fun. No pressure of grades or needing to prepare something to say in class. It's only the books you want to read and know about, presented by best-selling author Kimberly Ford. Everything from Cormac McCarthy to Madame Bovary, from classics like Frankenstein to modern hits like Lessons in Chemistry. I love Ireland, but I missed the boat on James Joyce. The Foxed Page has a three-part series on Dubliners, and that's a pretty great starting point. Want to get the most out of what you read? The Foxed Page is for you. Get it now wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we have the same birthday.
September. Happy birthday, though.
Thanks, same to you.
How old?
44.
You just turned 44.
Yeah. 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 Mm. You, me, Lil Wayne, and Mitski, all September 27th.
Kerry Brownstein.
Oh, wow, really?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Jerry Stahl's the day after.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's around the zone. I just found out Mark Rothko, the great depressive abstract painter, was like the 25th, the same week.
I'm only going on day of, man.
Anything else? I know. That came up this morning. So when were we talking about Final Engagement? Was that, you know, outside of the show?
I don't know. We've definitely talked about it.
But I can't remember if it was on the show when you told me that it was like a lifesaver for you, my special.
Oh, I thought it was great.
My CD.
I love that thing. I mean, the seeing it live was also, dude, man, I've just never seen someone that vulnerable on stage. I don't think even since then. It was like, I loved seeing you in that. I mean, this is me and being my hipster. You were there. I was there before everyone else.
Yeah.
But you and Stanhope,
yeah,
when you weren't big draws,
yeah,
was the best. Because like you, when you're going through the divorce, it's you on a stool.
Yeah.
Every second seems like you're going to cry. Yeah. It's half full. These people don't know who you are. Yeah. It was like, yeah, I was like, what is this?
Yeah,
it was incredible.
Those were the days.
Yeah. Now they're all your fans and stuff. It's not the same.
Well, it's hard to get randos, you know, is what it is. I mean, it's hard to get like random people just coming in. It's easier at a comedy club, but certainly in theaters or where.
Yeah.
But like, I'll do comedy clubs. I had a bridal party, a bachelorette party recently.
You still dealing with that shit?
I didn't think I would have to, you know, but it does happen. I was in St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
I think it was it St. Louis? It must have been at the Helium.
Mm-hmm.
And they were over there in the corner with the bride and her dumb hat, whatever the fuck it was, and four girls. And they had kind of isolated themselves over there. And I come out to see how the opener's doing. And I see, like, whoever's organizing the party, like, this girl looks at me and goes, and I'm like, what? It's like, you can go online and make a decision about the comic you're about to see.
Sometimes I have to stop the show. Like, did anyone Google me before you came here? Like,
that's
what
right.
did you think you were going to see?
Right. And I said to him, I said, look, I'm not, this might not work out for you guys. It's not going to be a fun night. You know, and then I shit on him a little bit. And I said, you guys can leave. You probably have, there's other things you can do. You can save your night now. And they fucking left.
Did you, really?
They slipped out.
Did you assume they were going to not like you? Were they actively chatty and not liking you? Did you get up there being like, you're going to hate me?
No, it wasn't hate, but I could see they'd isolated themselves already. They weren't in the main audience. They weren't in the bulk of the audience. They were against the wall, stage left. And then I just noticed that they were talking among themselves. And I stopped them like, you don't have to stay.
Yeah.
It's okay to admit that you fucked up. I was the wrong comic for you to bring your dumb bachelorette party to, which none of us understand why you do anyways. None of us comics, we don't know why you come. Why do they come?
I don't know. It's something to do. I mean, they're not into strippers, so what are they going
to
do?
I mean, there's more creative things to do. Go to a goddamn dance club. We can go stand and watch some sad man for a fucking hour.
This is what it's going to be like for your husband if things don't work out.
I guess. I just don't. It's like I don't understand the tradition of it because it clearly is that.
I think it's hard for women to like. They do like scavenger hunts and crafts. It's like guys get into like nasty shit on a bachelor party,
I don't think
women. This is as nasty as it gets. It's seeing you. You know?
Yeah, I remember, I'm trying to think, my that joke you do in the special about the bachelor party, that's your opportunity to ruin, well, I don't remember what the joke is, we don't have to spoil it, but it was a funny observation, because I remember, I'm not sure I remember my bachelor, oh yeah, I do.
Yeah? What'd you do?
Well, it was okay, you know, like, it was the first wedding. The second wedding, there was no party.
There's no bachelor party for the second wedding.
There was no fathers at the wedding. It was just, you know, we did it in the backyard kind of abruptly with me and my big ideas. But the first one was a big deal. And my guys, they rented, my buddy's in music, and he rented a rehearsal space and got some local musicians, and we kind of had a jam session and
That's
drank.
Awesome.
And But That's then great. We went to a strip bar, and it was like, it is what it is. It's not my bag, you know?
Never liked it?
Not really. Mm. I just never understood it. I never understood the – I couldn't separate, like, is the idea that they don't like you at all and they're just doing this as their job?
That would be funny if they have it like that – you know that Dick's restaurant in Vegas, or, you know, the chain where they're, like, mean to you?
Yeah.
If they had, like, a strip club like that where they're just, like, mean strippers. I bet they have that.
I mean, but that's how I read it all the time. That's all I see. I don't know what other people are seeing. I'm seeing, you know, kind of, you know, broken, angry women doing this for a job, and some of them are good at it. And what determines whether they're good at it or not is if you don't see that. Right?
Well, for me personally, as a fan,
yeah.
I like, If I'm at, I hate TVs in bars. Mm. All these bars, so many bars are full of screens. I want to go to a bar to not look at a screen. And you know what would be cool to look at? A lady dancing. So that's it. If the music is good and I'm watching a lady dance, I'd much prefer that to a screen.
You don't have to throw money at a TV.
Dude, I mean, all right. Point well taken, but still, it's like
the TV's not demanding your attention.
Well, you have to go to a place where they're not pushing. I'm saying some strip clubs are very demandy, and it's like a sad
scene. So you're saying it's a casual night, maybe go out with a couple of friends, have a couple of drinks. Hey, she's coming over here. You guys want to watch her sit on my lap and grind on me for a little while?
I mean, but also I go to, like, in Portland, for example, it's different strip club cultures depending on where you go. And in Portland, it's really like you can buy a lap dance if you want. They're not hard selling them to you. You just tip the girls that are dancing on the pole when you want, and you can chill out and just like hang out. Yeah. They got good food, you know, just chilling.
The music's good. The last couple of times I've gone to a strip club, like, there's some part of me, I don't know if it's a savior thing or what, but if I walk out with a stripper's phone number, like, I feel like I've won a Golden Globe Award.
That is amazing. No, that's, how many times have you done that?
Twice.
That's pretty good, man.
But I didn't follow up on it, and I didn't know if it was for real. You know what I mean? Yeah, this is after, like, what, $200-$300.
Did you ask for it, or did she give it to you?
Well, I mean, I don't quite remember, but I remember, like, you know, when I left, I was with my buddy Don. It was years ago, and I'm like, dude, I gotta call this girl. And then, like, the next day, I'm like, what for?
Yes.
What is it? Like, how is that a big win? You know, like, what's going on? You think you can get away from your old man? You know, you think you can get away from the guy that makes you strip? To maybe have lunch with me?
Why are you taking away the agency from these women? There's no one making them do it. They love it.
Wow. Why are you living in a dream? No. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's good. I think you're correct.
I'm just bullshitting. I don't know.
No. I think that's how you have to look at it in terms of sex work and to be on the right side of things and appropriate. They do have agency, but it's not, the world is still the world.
Yes.
I mean, you know, whatever the choice is, and I didn't necessarily think we needed to get anything into too controversial, but they are primarily, depending where they're doing, I would say in 80% of the time, you know, grinding on losers for fucking money.
Yeah. You're making losers laugh for money. I mean, how much?
No, they're not. The loser coming to laugh can maybe bring his girlfriend or his mom.
You don't go to strip club with your mom?
Not usually.
Who's going to pick me up? I got it.
So wait, now am I hallucinating or did you introduce me to a wife?
Yeah, I've been kind of like, you talked about the bachelor party. I didn't want to bring it up because the special is where my life was when I taped it. I taped the special a while ago. So the special that I'm trying to, you know, release right now is about going through a breakup and having no wife. And now I have a wife. But I want people to know that because I want them to still believe in the special and dig the special.
No, I mean, ultimately,
I do have a wife and I love her very much.
People can watch the special and now they know it turned out okay for you.
Yes, it did turn out okay.
So there's less menace to the sad fucking guy.
Okay, good. Okay, yes, I did. I just got married. It was like, dude, it's been a crazy year. We got engaged in January and got married in July. So it was a big, like, very quick and hectic and beautiful and all that stuff.
How long did you know her?
We met 6 weeks before the pandemic, and then the pandemic hit and we moved in together right then and there.
I think that happened to a lot of people. I'd like to hear more of those stories that are success stories of relationships that were new, but then I was always sort of, then it became like, well, here you go.
Yeah.
Now you're together and there's no other way to go.
I mean, well, you know, we stayed together long enough that there was a time when we could have broke up, but it was like, man, it was just like, it was weird because the world was like, it felt like the world was falling apart outside of the doors of our apartment.
Yeah.
And then we're building this thing together inside. It was kind of cool.
Well, I like that you talk about the last one was the first Jew you dated as a Jew.
Yes. Yes. This one, I didn't end up marrying a Jew. So.
Well, of course not. Yeah, but it was one of the best jokes that I ever wrote. My first wife was Jewish, and you know we get along again. The problem with dating a Jewish woman for me, it could go either way, man or woman, was that everything you hated about going home is now in your house.
That's funny.
It's terrible.
That's funny.
And then the marrying a Jewish woman was sort of like you can't have the wedding you want. And the reason is because Esther can't make it up the hill. There's always an Esther, and she's not going up the hill.
That was my grandma's name. That was my grandma's name.
Yeah, of course.
It's weird. It's like I get confused by Better Call Saul and Barry because those are my two uncles' names. You know, I can't like
all these
names are coming back, I guess, somehow. But but my ex was she was Jewish, but honestly, she was half Jewish and half Irish, and she was more Irish relating than Jewish. So,
Have you tracked your genetics?
Yes, yes. Did you say genetics?
Yeah, sure. Genetics. Have you the Jewish 23andMe genetics? Yeah.
Well, I haven't done the 23andMe, but my grandpa's way into genealogy, and we actually took a trip back to Poland and Belarus and saw where we came from.
That's where I came
from. Interesting. Really? Yeah, we probably
Belarus,
probably same village.
It's Galicia.
Yeah, yeah, White Russia. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And have you been to Belarus?
No,
you're probably not going to go now.
But, yeah, so it seems a little heavy over there.
I don't know. Maybe you get a job at the Wagner Group.
But when Galicia was, it was Poland and it was Ukraine and now it's Belarus. I don't know where Belarus was. Pale settlement. I know that the Pale settlement.
Yeah.
Was right.
White Russia, Pale settlement, Galicia. I think it's all the same name for that area.
Well, Galicia is actually a town
in Poland. Oh, that's a town. Okay, all right.
Where I learned some stuff because I did that Finding Your Roots show. And it was like an oil boom town in the early 1900s.
Wow.
Or maybe the 1800s. And like he was able to track my Jewish people further back into the Pale settlement and into Poland than he had anyone else.
That's awesome.
So I have this bizarro family tree thing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandpa's been working on this for a long, long time. He's still working on it. And it is really interesting. But also it's like I like going there and it's kind of, they built like, there was a Jewish cemetery and they built a sports field over it. It's like, oh, you don't got to rub it in. I know we're bad at sports, but this is like kind of rude. Also it's like, I don't know. I just always feel like, yeah, we won. We're still here.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you watch that like Eurozone, what's that? There's the Kazakhstan competition.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just saying, you see what European culture is like without Jews and they don't have enough black people. And you're like, well, this is what you get.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Maybe you shouldn't have gotten rid of us because we're we're pretty amazing when it comes to that stuff.
But the thing that fucking freaks me out and scares me all the time just because of the current situation and the tone of anti-Semitism, which I talk about a lot, it seems like my last three specials and what I'm working on now, there's at least 10 minutes about anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And some of it is to provoke anti-Semitism in my audience, you know? And because like I talk about that on stage, that, you know, sometimes I go on a bit long about it because the truth is a lot of people don't know Jews.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, and they're slowly starting to normalize anti-Semitism.
Yes, for real.
So the way that Jews are characterized is pretty specific and pretty old timey.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, you know, you talk about it a little bit in the special about not wanting to do, like I used to say, like, I didn't talk about being a Jew on stage for years because I didn't see there was a way to do it that wasn't honoring the trope, whether it was the neurotic Jew or the old Jew. There were two kinds of Jews, the Jew in analysis or the Jew that just wants to sit down. Right. So, and I was like, I don't know where you go with this, but eventually I owned it, but I own it in a different way. And it was always about trying to undermine the stereotypes of the bigger ones, like Globe, the Jews that run the world, or this idea of
that. That's what I was actually thinking about, what I want to ask you about, because I've been trying to write a bit about how I don't like conspiracy theories because they always end up blaming the Jews.
Yeah.
And you were a big conspiracy theorist. So didn't you like go down that rabbit hole for a while and then say, oh, wait, who is responsible for all this? Oh, it's me and all my relatives. Maybe I don't believe in this. That didn't stop you?
Well, no, because there was the Freemason thing. And then there was the sort of, the United States government, CIA, all that shit. But the ones, the blood libel stuff.
Yeah.
And the sort of Zionist occupied government stuff.
Yes.
I mean, that's sort of, I think, I did a whole episode with a conspiracy theorist, a theorist historian, basically.
Wow.
So when I was in it, it wasn't Jew related. It was more Freemasonry in the government.
I didn't realize that was a newer development. That's
it's not. I mean, it's always sort of there, but now with QAnon and with Soros and with, you know, now that they can put people on it.
But those are just Soros is just Rothschild. I mean, it's like it's newer,
no,
but
true.
It's the old shit
sure.
coming back.
But
I
was
I mean?
Yeah, the Rothschilds were kind of adjacent to the Freemasons. But
yeah. That's what I'm saying.
No,
it's all
I get
there,
it.
You know.
But when I was into it, it was more about, you know, this idea that the truth about, you know, government. Government and corporations and all this other shit was where it stopped for me. I didn't know what I understood. The Rothschilds were a medieval banking family, and the reason that Jews were bankers was because the Christians weren't allowed to lend money. And I knew all that,
mm-hmm.
But now it's just a lot of people are just sort of taking information. It all falls into that woke thing. Like even people who should be proud of being woke are nervous about being woke. And the Jews, anything that right-wing people disagree with or want to stereotype falls under the woke umbrella.
I mean, dude, I don't even – that word has been – these words get twisted around and you don't even know what they mean anymore. And they get so co-opted and they become a left thing and then become the right thing and they go back and forth. And I don't even know what you even mean when you're saying that.
No, of course. They don't either. You know, it's just a new objectifier.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it strips people of their point of view, their identity. But it's a pretty broad – term.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because the way that they're using the word Democrat
and woke
or
liberal, it's all pejorative, right?
Pejorative, but almost it's bordering on Jew.
Ha. Yes. Yeah. What was there was one about that. There's another conspiracy theory. I can't remember the words they use for it. It's this theory that actually ends up being about Jews, and people don't even realize. Sometimes people are into these conspiracy theories that are Jews, globalists.
Yeah,
that's
globalists.
What it is.
Oh yeah,
globalist
totally
means
Jews. Of course.
And people don't realize that. In fact, I used to told a joke about this conspiracy theory thing, and a guy reached out to me. He's like, "I didn't know globalists meant Jews," and I just think it's like it's a weird way to like to hide it.
Well, that's because the left uses it too in terms of
globalists.
Well, yeah, because like the sort of global economic model is, you know, was a big thing on the left. That's why everything's getting confused and the right's co-opting left language. But globalization was, you know, not seen as a good thing because it leveled the wage field and it sort of encourages slavery on a global scope.
And that's like neoliberal, which is the opposite of liberal, is all very confusing, right?
Well, right. But the neoliberals and the neoconservatives were all about globalization.
Yeah. And that's so.
But
so,
the opposite of globalization is sort of unionized work in the country we live in that employs people within the country at a reasonable living wage with safety nets and protections. And that falls into the world of socialism, which is part of the lefty kind of point of view. So globalization was a threat to the idealism of socialists, but also in the right wing world, it was just a way to say like where the Chinese are taking our jobs, the Mexicans are taking our jobs, the Indians are taking our jobs. Everything, nothing's made here anymore because like if everybody was working, you know, towards, you know, fair employment, they'd be pro-union. And somehow or another, the right-wing propaganda has got working-class white people thinking unions are demonic. And it's all mind fuck.
Well,
anyways,
they're
we're
really
getting into the woods.
Yeah, but they're very good. They're just like the right is – it's weird. All the writers are liberal, but the right has the best slogans. They really write things – I mean like pro-life – what are you against life? I mean, that's really well written. You know what I mean?
Well, they've got people chipping away at it angrily round the clock, whether they're fucking, you know, radicalized gamers or fucking radicalized Christians or just right wing think tanks. They're doing it all day long. The left doesn't really exist. And centrist Democrats and liberals, we don't have that type of organization because we're kind of primarily want to live our lives.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and we've become able to embrace tolerance, which is necessary for democracy,
yes,
but it has now been taken out of the equation. We're in a lesser position in the great war of words and charisma.
But honestly, that's because I know you're saying it, and you think the anti-woke thing is just the right thing, but I think some people want to push back against the overreach of that kind of stuff, where it kind of became a boy who cries wolf thing with all the outrage all the time.
And yeah, but I find that the place that really happens most is on college campuses. And eventually, I think that – and on social media platforms.
Sure.
But I think it will find its own level. We don't know what these kids who are triggered by everything and you know, worried about, you know, how they want to represent themselves sexually or pronoun-wise or everything else. It feels to me that eventually that will settle down. You know, obviously – you know, destroying someone's life over false accusations or over a tweet that has as much to do with clickbait culture as it does anything else.
Yes.
With the failure of journalism.
Yes, 100%.
So there's a lot of things going on, but I don't. It still seems to me that you can say whatever you want.
Pretty much, yes, yes. I do see what you're saying. It's a false paper tiger, or whatever. You know, it's
a bit.
Yeah, it's not really like a thing as much as they're saying it is. But I do think. I it's not totally one. It does exist.
The guys who fall through the cracks are guys like me and you, is that when you have tribalized anti-woke comedy. I was at the Comedy Store and I walked down there. There was one person in each room doing their trans jokes. And I'm like, is this even necessary?
Exactly.
Right. I mean, so the people that are just kind of like slightly filthy progressive or liberal people, you know, that our comedy doesn't have a tribe.
This is exactly
anymore.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm concerned about. This is exactly what I'm concerned about.
It's a reasonable concern.
I don't know.
But the special's good.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Thanks for watching it.
Yeah, and it's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
And I think we did a nice chunk of time here. Should we have a couple of Jews speculating about global politics for 15 minutes? Maybe.
Why not? Why not? Oh, now we can't speculate? We can only control it?
Ah, that's it. We're not even doing our job. Good talking to you.
Thanks for having me, man.
Okay, there you go. Again, present tense, the new special. Premieres tonight, October 19th, on Louis's YouTube channel. Go subscribe. Louis Katz Comedy. All right, so Stanhope. A lot of you know Stanhope. Stanhope is a one-of-a-kind rogue of sorts, a self-made man, an institution, a legend. He's a guy that we've kind of run in the same circles for decades, but always a unique take on things. He's one of... He's definitely unto himself, a singular comedian, and it's always good to hang out with him. He's got this new movie. Well, he's actually acting in it. It's called Road Dog. It's available right now to rent or own on all cable, satellite, and digital platforms. It's about a stand-up comic who is almost exactly like Doug Stanhope, or what Doug Stanhope kind of is. Or familiar enough, a Doug Stanhope-ish character. Well, anyway, this is me talking to Stanhope.
You still smoke?
No. Not since February 15th.
That's pretty good. I haven't smoked for years, but now I'm back on these fucking nicotines. Lozenges. They're very good.
Yeah, I didn't know you stopped.
Stopped the nicotine?
Yeah.
I did for a few years. And then, some motherfucker, said, come on, man, let's just have a good cigar in Canada. I know exactly the motherfucker. It was a Santino. It was a Santino-shaped motherfucker. And I'm like, and I knew it would just string me out immediately. And I'm like, yeah, all right.
I swear, I went out to Austin, and every comic has started smoking. And Skankfest, too. Yeah, like every comic smoked. It felt like I was the last smoker. Like me and Dave Attell were the only two that are still going outside and standing in front of a fucking office building. And now every comic smoked. Big J. Okerson was smoking. Everyone.
Well, I feel like he smoked. I feel like he always smoked.
Yeah.
A J. Maybe it's part of the whole anti-woke persona.
I don't know.
You got to start smoking cigarettes in your 30s like a fucking moron.
I don't know. I watched your special this morning, and it made my whole day.
Oh, thanks, like,
I was laughing. My wife, Bingo, is actually, she started it at one point months ago and said, hey, I started Mark Maron, and she never watches stand-up comedy.
Right.
She goes, it's actually really good. And I go, well, yeah. She goes, I stopped it because I wanted to watch it together.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, when I'm in the mood to watch stand-up.
Sure.
Which it is fucking never.
Rare, yeah.
I'm like, well, I'm going on the podcast. I'll watch it this morning. And I just fucking, from the beginning, was fucking, yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
Well done.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
That's very,
And the dark shit about Lynn was fucking crushing.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Really good.
Well, that means a lot to me, man.
Selfie? No. I did. When they were collecting my mother's body, I tried to make a discreet selfie with them in the background carrying her body out.
Did you do it?
It's all blurry.
No,
yeah, it
didn't happen.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it. I didn't. You know, that was after the fact. When you're in the middle of that stuff, you know, you're not really thinking hilariously.
Yeah, I was more worried because there was legal issues because I was kind of an assisted suicide.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I don't want to camp it up by taking an obvious.
You don't want to seem too insensitive.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I was talking to Louis Katz yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
He's great, you know, and, you know, he's got that new special. But we were talking about comedy, and he was talking about me and you. And then I, you know, I watched a movie, you know, and the movie's called Road Dogg. And first of all, who's that kid that wrote that book? You know,
Sam Talent.
Sam Talent. His movie's dead.
Yeah. No, he was very, very upset when I told him. I think I sent him the script, too. Yeah. And he's like, ah. Fuck.
Well, he, you know, I talked to him because I love that book and I know you liked it.
Yeah.
It's great. It's our life and it's very specific and it's very hard to nail that thing.
Right.
You know, the generation of comics that you and I come from, which is the post explosion comics, that, you know, it's very specific. And I thought he, in that book, nailed it very well.
Yeah.
And in this
especially
movie.
For a guy that young.
Well, yeah, but he's hanging around there. All you need is one Rick Kearns.
Yeah, exactly. Great reference.
To get that guy, you just got to spend a weekend with Rick Kearns. Hey, where can we, is there, you know, where we can get an eight ball?
First of all, that book we're talking about is called Running the Light.
Yeah.
And it's one of the best books I've ever read.
Yeah.
Certainly the best about stand-up.
No shit.
When you read it, who were you? I was picturing Ron White.
I got Ron, but, you know, it's like, well, this is what I want to talk to you about, because in the... in the movie,
yeah,
you play some version of that guy, but it's pretty close to you, ish.
Yeah,
and the thing that really struck me outside of the, you know, because when we got into the game, even the generation before us, there were literally guys who were trying to, you know, not pay their taxes. They were just ahead of the law. I mean, the guy who I knew well and spent time with was Bastille.
All right.
Frankie.
I only knew the legend of.
Yeah. So I was one of those guys that he tried to sort of get me to think I was learning something, but really just to drive him places, you know. But he was the guy that, you know, I would go. The Bastille story is long. But, you know, he was that guy. He was a dope fiend. So, yeah. You know, I had him in my mind. I had Kearns in my mind. But I didn't know. There was how many guys like the guy in
that? Frankie Bastille, does he have just a tiny part in Mr. Saturday Night where he's on TV and Billy Crystal's character is going, "Well, this kids today." Was he a long?
I can't imagine that was him.
Long curly hair guy?
No.
Okay.
Well, Lord Corrette, the guy who followed him around for a while. You know that Bastille legend was. I was in Boston coming up at the beginning in the late '80s, and he moved there. Because he was literally running from, you know, child payments in the IRS. And he's famously he wouldn't want his name in the paper or on marquees. Because he didn't want anyone to know where he was. And I think he eventually got busted on the child support stuff because he did a radio show and somebody heard him and told the woman.
I got served once in a green room.
Really?
Yeah.
For what?
I was libel or something. This is a long time ago. I just talked shit about someone on my website and said he's probably in the NAMBLA Hall of Fame or something like that.
Yeah.
They can sue you for that.
And he did.
But it had been many years since, but I got the man show. So he's like, oh, this guy's got money now. It got thrown out, but it still cost me like 10 grand in legal fees to get it thrown out.
I don't know what kind of fucking
anyway, the point
that.
Is, I know the feeling of wishing you could do comedy anonymously.
Yeah, but that was the guy I thought of. But what I was thinking, though, is that the whole, well, granted, the guy did you quit drinking, too?
No.
Oh.
No. I'm not crazy.
I couldn't quite get it straight. I knew you quit something. And then I thought, yeah, Doug quit drinking. It would be exactly like that movie. You would get on stage lost, like a child.
Yeah, I would have that fear of going on stage. But then again, at the point my brain is, I have to write everything. There's no riffing. I'm not going to go up and do crowd work. Yeah.
Was that
If I take like 2 weeks off, I have to go back and listen to the last set I did just to make sure I hit all the beats. And,
Was that always?
I cared less earlier. Yeah. So I would go up and fuck off a set. It was a great feeling when you came off stage after an hour and go, I almost used no material on that show.
It was it'll never happen again, and it was useless. I'm so proud of myself.
Exactly. Now I feel like I have to people pay a lot of money. So
yeah. You got to be prepared, have a show.
Right.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I got more like that, but I still don't write a lot down. I outline stuff. A lot of things get lost. I haven't done, you know, I've been trying to work out this new hour in clubs. And then I took this week off, and I feel I'm going out next week, and I'm like, what the fuck? What was it?
Yeah.
And I got to go look at the outline and make sure I get shit in. But so much gets lost. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not writing out verbatim the entire set, but I get it.
Outline.
Okay, this goes into that, and I get it. Because if I forget to do that segue, then this entire chunk is lost.
Yeah.
I'm like you. I don't have fucking
jokes.
I have... Yeah.
You have to keep... Well, they become jokes the more you repeat them. You know what I mean? It was so funny.
It's very... you're one of those people that's terrifying to watch that I'm like, oh, please don't. There's a few times in the Bleak special, Bleak to Dark,
what'd
where
you think was gonna
I'm
happen?
Like, oh, then you're going to do one of my bits?
Oh,
like,
right. Well, I texted you. You never got back to me.
What?
It's so funny because if I come up with a bit, like I'll text you and Attell. Hey, man, it's Maron. Just wrote a bit and did it a few times where I refer to an abortion clinic as an angel factory, which seems like something only a handful of us could come up with. Have you heard that or done that? Hope not. It's a fun one to say.
That was exactly the bit that I'm going, oh, please don't go down the road I went down.
Right.
I just filmed a special in May, and I still haven't gotten around to getting it fucking edited.
Yeah.
But it didn't go that way. But Angel Factory was fucking beautiful.
But it was one of those ones I came up with on stage, and I'm like, oh my god, I have to somehow own this in the ether. And then, the funny thing is like, I think it was always this way. There was not a lot of us who would do that.
Right.
You know, they're like, Attell used to call me up, and we're totally different types of comics, but I'd get these weird calls like, hey, it's Dave, do you do anything about jerking off in
Fat
the Bible?
Girls on a pogo stick.
Yeah.
No, it's good. I could have sworn it was you.
But I knew that any of the long form guys, but there's no one that has the balls to do this shit anymore. I mean, I don't know.
I don't really see comics anymore. And I'm always loath to watch a special. Like, now I'm not, I don't have any dates on the books, and I don't plan on it for a while.
Why?
So I will go out and watch, you know, some people's specials.
But if you go to a festival, you see it, right?
Yeah, but I don't really watch the comedy. I have fun at festivals and hang out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm more like the green room guy.
Right, right. Hey, there's an old timer in the green room. Yeah. You want to go ask him questions?
I just want to say hi to comics because I never see them.
Yeah, I probably see them more. But I'll watch guys. There's some guys I like watching. I tend to like goofier guys to get a kick out of them. Like, I watched Bargatze's special twice.
I watched during quarantine. Yeah. I watched a lot.
The other one,
Nate was very good.
He's got a pace.
Yeah.
And a way of talking that's pretty unique.
Yeah.
And it's all clean, and it drives me nuts.
Eddie Pepitone.
That's great.
I didn't see him. I just saw him as a person. But
hi, Doug.
That's fucking great, Eddie Pepitone. Yeah, I saw him at the Last Gank Festival I went to in Houston a couple years ago, and just like you're my new favorite.
Oh yeah, he's great. He's great because he's like he's yelling constantly, but he's so sweet.
Yeah,
like he can't yell away his sweetness. But he's like he's doing good. But the question I was wondering
he's still funny on Twitter.
Is he? Yeah.
Two people left that can actually go on Twitter.
I can't read it anymore. I don't understand it anymore. You tweet and no one gets them. It seems.
No.
I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, I don't. That's when I remember like MySpace. Everyone had kind of fled, and I was the last guy going.
Yeah,
these used to get more responses than,
and they're gone.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I can't. I'm old. How old are you?
56.
I just turned 60. Oh. Just turned fucking 60.
Right. I said it like we were an old couple when you were doing the bit about it. You go, I don't really feel old. And I go, because we don't have kids. And then you said it as I was saying it.
It's true. We have nothing to judge our decay against. But the character in the movie was somebody, you know, very familiar to me. But the
did
guy,
you do a lot of that kind of road work?
You know, yeah, I did enough. The difference in my making my bones was that in Boston, the market where I started, getting paid to do stand-up was a one-nighter market.
Right.
So those were two men shows.
Yeah.
So you would go out with a headliner, and the opener had to do a half hour. You know,
they were then, like, New England was basically like triple gigs that you could go home afterwards.
That's right. But yeah. Sometimes it would take 3 hours to get home.
Right.
But it was just like there was a half hour guy and then a 45 minute guy and then you drive.
Yeah.
So I started with, in terms of time, with the time of a feature. So by the time I left, you know, Boston, I could feature pretty strong and I was headlining pretty shortly after. But I didn't, you know, I never understood the road. I didn't understand that there was networking involved and you had to treat club owners with a certain amount of respect and, you know, people had to want to see you again. I didn't understand any of that. I was just sort of like, I'm here. What the fuck are we doing? And the tone just never locked in.
So you were always like that?
Yeah.
You didn't grow into the Marc Maron that we know and are afraid of?
No, that guy's a little, he's tempered. It was so funny. I was on stage the other night, you know, and I feel like I've gotten pretty open, you know, because of that last special, you know, and I'm doing these things I'm working on. There's some guy yammering, like, right up front, like, answering me, like, oh, yeah. You know, I'm like, dude, are you going to shut the fuck up? You know, and like in the audience stunk. You know, they were just an original room audience. It was Tuesday night. And they weren't hostile. They were just hearing everything as somebody saying, you know, serious things. You know, where they're just sort of like, you know, they're not landing as jokes. And this guy's talking. And I go, what the fuck is your problem? And I said, you know, what kind of miserable fucking relationship did you have with your father that you need this much negative attention? What the fuck? I've been doing this for fucking 40 years. You're the same guy. I've seen you a million times. Different hats, same asshole. You know, and I lost it, right? And then I have this moment where I'm like, oh, wow, you just saw the real Mark. Okay. But I don't use that guy anymore, Doug. That guy's, he's on hiatus for the most part.
That's good. That's good.
But there was a brief time where I was trying to, you know, do jokes. And like there's those 1989 Evening at the Improvs where I seem pretty together. But I did a joke in 89 on Caroline's Comedy Hour about the three kings showing up in an abortion clinic dumpster. So I always had the same, what's gone wrong? But yeah, I had the same temperament. But that was where – that was the late 80s. So this is what I was trying to ask you is that idea of selling out and the idea of integrity in terms of how you do the thing doesn't seem to exist anymore. And I'm not even sure where we got it because I had it for years. And I knew guys that had it. But when I think back on it, there weren't that many people that had that. And I guess we got it from Bill, right? I mean, where did we get that?
I really had no sense of selling out or anyone. When I started, I didn't know anything about L.A. or coasts. I started in Vegas, which was if you had any idea that you can't start in Vegas, but I didn't because I lived there.
Yeah.
And then I just started doing triple gigs. So I was driving all over fucking, you know, from, you know, Colorado to Montana to Oregon, just all these shithole towns. And that's pretty much all I knew for the first few years.
Yeah.
So I didn't really had any barometer of what hackneyed was.
So you didn't have that sort of idea? Because, you know, when I was, you know, hanging out with Frankie and he was, you know, telling me the ways of the road and stuff, you know, they, you know, there was boat acts. There was, you know, the idea of a boat act.
Oh.
You know, there was a hack.
Cruise ship acts, yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. And then he used to do this thing about, like, you know, if you're going to juggle, you got to, you know, juggle something big, something, you know, dangerous, and then something edible. That's, you know, it's got to, you got to eat the apple. You know, like, he had the structure of things, but I sort of abided by it, and, you know, maybe a lot of it came out of insecurity. So that stuff was all scripted. You never had that sense of, like, eventually that these guys are garbage comedy, you know, we're doing the real stuff?
I don't really know when that developed. I'm sure, like, I remember when I got comparisons to Bill Hicks. Mm. And that was always worrisome.
It was never good. It was never good.
Yeah.
Because he was like, the people that knew him at that time and loved him, he was this singular thing that you couldn't even cross.
You don't see that idolatry anymore, that the Hicksafants that were just a hardcore, you know, if you're anything like Bill, you're trying to be Bill. Like if you're saying anything important, there's a lot of people that are, you're trying to be socially relevant. That's Hicks.
Yeah,
Hicks did that. We should stop social relevance.
Right. Like, it was insane. I remember I had to defend wearing black jeans. You know, like to some fucking assholes. I think I had a black jeans and a black shirt on, and I don't even remember seeing him. You know, do much by when the comparison
just
started.
Just quick side note: I thank God you're still fucking audio only. I didn't feel undue pressure to put on one of my stupid suits.
Oh, thank God!
I wasn't in the fucking mood for a stupid suit.
No, yeah. So, you made that for yourself. You say
I
don't. Like
but I still enjoy it, but not today. Like today, it's fucking hot out, and
it's daytime.
I just feel dumb, like in front of you. I feel like all right. Fucking Marin, let it go.
I don't need to come with the circus and the suits. But when in the movie in Road Dogg, there's a line in there where, you know, that one of the reasons you blew the Letterman, your character, was because he asked you to wear a suit. And then I wondered, is your suit now a over-the-top play on that? You know, being pissed off about having to wear suits at some other time. So now you wear these vintage clown suits that you find places.
It's my only hobby on the road.
Yeah.
Is to
just go
buy
one.
Some people go to museums and shit.
Yeah.
I want to see, you know, Wrigley Field. I go to thrift stores and try to get lucky on some really fucking goofy vintage jackets and ties.
So back in the day, though, you weren't, because like I was sort of more of a dick than you, I think. But there was this thing that, you know, to have integrity. And I'm, you know, and I don't, because most people, you know, don't. And I know that was like, because I know Frankie had it. I don't think Hicks spoke to it, but there was definitely a few of us that were like.
Integrity was just as far as material goes?
Material, stand up, you know, purpose, art of the fucking thing, what real stand up was.
Yeah, but that doesn't. And self-sabotage was always there with me.
That's right.
For whatever integrity I had, I still didn't have any compunction with throwing a show in the toilet if I wasn't in the mood, or that guy,
right.
The asshole with the fucking
the hat, yeah.
Talking back.
Yeah.
I'd walk a fucking room in a second,
sure.
Especially when people were coming to see comedy and not
you,
Doug Stanhope. Right.
Yeah.
If you got in here on a fucking free pass, fuck you and your bachelorette party. I want your night to suck.
Yeah.
You worked fucking 5 days, and this is your Friday, and you put so little effort into the fucking payoff that you get for, you know, 50 hours of work week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just going to go out on a coupon. Fuck you.
I stopped doing, before I even was able to pull people, I stopped doing paper rooms. I couldn't handle it. It took me fucking years to realize I'm not everybody's cup of tea.
I still hate when I find out someone doesn't like me.
Because exactly. I don't understand. I'm doing comedy for everyone. Everyone. It's so relatable. Why? What are you missing?
Yeah, you don't. I mean, you don't have to. I don't have to be your favorite, but you should like me.
Yeah, you should at least know what, you know, respect what I'm doing. But I had a realization. I was in Vegas. I did that. You ever do that little room, the wise guys, Keith Stubbs got?
No, I haven't.
He's got a room in the Arts District. Seats like 220. And when I'm working out hours, I go. And I was talking about like the Bellagio or these casino rooms. And I'm like, I'm not that guy. This is where I belong. And I said, even my fans, if they were walking around the Bellagio, you know, on a weekend in Vegas, and they saw my poster, they'd be like, oh, Marin's here. Like, I don't know if I'm in the mood. You know, we're having a good time. We can see him when he comes to our town. It's a little heavy for Vegas.
Yeah, I know. This movie I'm in, they showed it at Skankfest, and then I was tripping, and I'm like I had to do Q&A after it, and I'm like, fuck, I'm on mushrooms, and I just realized what a downer this is. This festival is the most fun in the world, and people are just drowning for an hour and 45 minutes and sad.
But did they like it? They liked it.
I don't know.
What were the questions?
You?
Are you too tripped out to even?
Oh, yeah. It was a very brief Q&A because they had to turn the room over, and I was just making fun of because I was high as shit.
How did this movie come about? This guy's a real guy, but he shot a little movie. The guy who directed the
two writers are, you know, former comics of that era.
But it wasn't the guy from Meet the Parents?
Yeah, yeah. Greg Liana, the director, he wrote the original Meet the Parents.
Yeah.
And directed it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they get a hold of me because I fit the suit, as they say.
He was a comic, that guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, both him and Tony Boswell, the producer, co-writer.
Comics were from where? Chicago?
Yeah.
Huh.
So that's why there's so many Chicago comics in the picture.
You knew them as comics?
No, I didn't know them as comics. They just, I guess they had seen me on Louie.
And yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay, this.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
It's pretty much a continuation of that part.
That guy's already ready.
Yeah.
He's made for it.
Yeah, I've done this part. It's just,
but how'd you feel
it's
about
like Rocky II. I'm in.
But you didn't put any effort into changing your body.
No, no.
You didn't get ripped for this.
The only thing I had a problem with is they kept making me just, I think wardrobe had to make sure, like censors. They go, okay, we have to change some shit or we deny our reason for being here. So wardrobe made me change my fucking shirt every.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
every
why?
Day, for every day.
Yeah, real me wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'd wear the same shit for 2 weeks. That's about how long this movie is covered.
Yeah. Well, I thought the movie, like, because it's, you know, we're going to be the ones that, you know, judge it, comics, you know, it's got a sweet enough ending, in a way. It's still pretty dark, but I was, anytime I see it, the authenticity of how that life is, and I think they did all right with it.
Yeah, it's hard because it is a period piece. That would be a late 90s era. Early 2000s.
I guess that is because they don't really. Yeah,
no one's trying to get on the
TikTok
Tonight Show
anymore.
Yeah, everything's internet related,
right?
And they ignore all that. But
so that
all
guy's
the cars
sort of,
are current day cars, so
they didn't really fucking care.
Well, they didn't really have the budget to make
sure
everything 1998.
Well, right, but that didn't even bother me so much, because I don't really understand what the fuck is happening in comedy now.
Yeah.
I just know that there's a lot of people taking up time on stage and making money doing it that don't even have 20 minutes. I know that.
I know that you're still doing audio. Do you get shit for that? I want to go back to my podcast, just being audio. I don't want my face in it.
We never... Me and my producer Brendan, who's a radio genius and a bona fide kind of brilliant guy, was never what we set out to do.
Yeah,
like he's a radio producer, and we do we edit, we craft shows, we put together audio content. It was never the idea just to sit, and it would drive him nuts to have just a couple of guys sitting around for an hour and a half with no ability to cut that chunk out where they're just farting. It's just not what we do.
Yeah. When I ask people, because I have no idea what the fuck's going on in the industry, far more than you don't know what's going on, because you at least live in it.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, what's left of it. Yeah.
I can't even go to see comedy where I live. I would have to drive 4 hours to see.
In big where is it? Bigsby?
Bisbee. Yeah.
Bisbee.
Yeah.
How's it going out there? You're the mayor?
No. It's a long story. I had a small house fire that has been taking a year for my to next week. Supposedly, I'm getting my house back.
Like, where you been living? Done.
My wife has a house down the street.
Oh, okay.
So I some time with her, and the insurance paid for a hotel up in Tucson for almost a year.
Oh, that's nice.
So that was a nice getaway.
Yeah.
Right by the airport. So I could ditch in and out. Yeah. But not knowing what you're doing or how the business is working, every time I ask advice, like how do you monetize?
Right.
And like Annie Letterman would say, oh, we can't say swear words on our YouTube channel. Like we have to bleep all this out.
And I'm
like, what? YouTube, you can't swear? Not if you want to be monetized. Every time I ask advice, I don't want to do it. Okay. Glad I asked.
Also, to keep up with that shit. These guys, they're working all the time.
Yeah.
The content pushers, you got to stay in it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's fucking nuts. You know, we just do this thing. We do our thing twice a week. I do the stand up, and when acting sometimes. But I'm out on the road a lot. I'm doing more stand up than I ever have in my life. And I think I'm better at it than I have been. So it's kind of fun. Like, I have no dread.
Yeah.
And that's unique.
Yeah. I have to focus on that. All right, do less.
Yeah,
just hone what you're doing more.
Yeah.
And don't try to learn new things. Because I don't want to work more in my life.
That's right.
It's the whole point of getting into this business was sloth.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, what do you do for a living?
I walk around with a pen.
Yeah.
That's
I
it.
I sleep in.
Yeah. I can't sleep in anymore. You can still sleep in?
No.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Even with sleep aid.
Can't do it?
No.
I can get to sleep, but I can't. I wake up. I just wake up.
I wake up early and...
And then there you are.
I do like when I'm home,
yeah,
waking up early and I getting shit done before it gets too hot.
Yeah. Or, yeah. I'm never bored.
Right.
I'm just never fucking bored.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what people with regular lives are like.
Quarantine, I developed the most harmful addiction I've ever had, which is comfort.
Yeah.
Like, I was never bored. I was always had a homeowner's project.
Yeah, always. When you have a house, it never ends. But well, but there was, did you have that moment where you're like, when COVID hit, I had this moment where I'm like, you know, I don't miss comedy at all.
No.
And I'm like, maybe I'm all better. That was my thought. I must be fixed. I don't need to do it. And then
I don't think this is agoraphobia as much as it's agoraphilia.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a fetish.
Yeah.
It's never leaving my house.
It's nice. And because you got some land, right? You can walk around.
Yeah.
A yard anyway.
I got four lots.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But then, as soon as comics started doing it, I'm like, fuck, I guess we're back at it.
Right. Yeah, that's why I'm taking a year off. Like, I was really losing my mind, like, having to live out of a hotel and then go on the road and stay in other hotels. And then, where's my shit? Did I leave that at the other house?
Yeah, yeah,
is
yeah.
Is that in the hotel? Or
how are your fans these days?
They're aging, I think.
Right. Yeah. I mean, are they still expecting? Do you feel? Because I remember we talked about it before. That there was a period there where, you know, the amount they wanted you to drink was...
Those have faded away. I don't have the rowdies anymore.
Oh, you don't? Where you got...
Occasionally, I guess, some
one or
places.
Two, but you don't feel the pressure to be this, this destructo all the time?
No, I'm so old. I go out the back. I Hedberg shows now, like, just
disappear.
Directly out the back door. Yeah. I'll be right back.
It was so funny working with Hedberg, because you'd be like, are we going to hang out? And then, like, where is he? He's not at the hotel. I don't know where he is.
I remember going to, we were St. Cloud, Minnesota, and we did a show. And then we went to a Denny's kind of all-night restaurant.
Yeah.
And I called this girl. I knew a girl.
Yeah.
And I called her on the payphone. And then I went in to find Hedberg. And I assumed he's in the bathroom.
I
wait for like half an hour. He went out the back fucking door.
Yeah, just
and
gone.
Next day, I go, what happened to you? We were going to eat. And he said... Yeah, I saw you calling a girl, and I didn't want to be a third wheel.
he did. One, it was. I remember this Hedberg moment where I was working. Do you remember Indianapolis when Chick and Patty had those places? They had the comedy.
No.
They had the one in Broad Ripple, and then they had the one in downtown. And then they owned a bar. And you know, after the show downtown, we all went to the bar, and the phone rings on the wall, and the bartender answers it and goes, "It's for you." And I go, hello. He goes, hey, it's Mitch. I'm like, what? And he's like, I know how Indianapolis works. It was pretty funny. But I think that was his region, you know, that was where he came up, that all those states.
Yeah.
But so how did you, so they just asked you to do this part?
Yeah, get an email. And I said, absolutely no way.
Yeah.
And Hannigan called me. You got an offer. To
do a movie.
Yeah, to 5 weeks in Chicago in February.
Who would want to do that?
No way.
There was real snow.
Yeah. But yeah. Then I read it and I go, okay, I've already done this part. So
yeah. But I think there was probably a little more acting involved than the Louis part, wasn't there?
Yeah, probably because there was...
The kid.
Yeah.
You had to, had to be a dad.
Yeah. It's so fucking easy to... Just all I have to do is memorize this page.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And make some choices.
Yeah, I don't have to memorize the whole script because you're going to be sitting there for like 8 hours waiting for them to get all the shit together. You're going to have nothing to do but memorize
think
your next
that thing out.
Page. Yeah.
Yeah, but there were a couple of real kind of emotional moments that I thought were you handled pretty well, because it's hard for us to access, you know, the proper emotion to be present.
It was difficult because I had to do it sober, unlike you know my set.
That was it. But that they asked you to do that?
No, I just know you can't do 12 hours of being the same.
Right.
You can't be the exact same kind of drunk for 12 hours.
No.
You're going to peak and valley, and those shots aren't going to line up.
You're going to be tired.
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing this scene, okay, we're going to do your lines, and then we're going to break down the cameras, and then we're going to shoot them all from the other angle after lunch.
Right, yeah.
Well, if you're drinking for those 4 hours.
Can't maintain it.
Yeah. Yeah,
unless you're
doing the same scene, but half of the time you got Bell's palsy on your face.
Yeah, or you got to ask for blow. Someone's got to bring the blow. When you hear these stories about these big actors that were just jammed out of their fucking brains doing these, it must have required so much blow. Because if you're waiting for 4 hours, you're gonna blow through your blow pretty quick. They must have fucking suitcases full of it, like Mel Gibson and whoever.
Yeah, I don't think I. Because I'm stuttery right now, but cocaine, and then I can't keep a train of thought.
Yeah.
Like even on stage where I would need cocaine, those three show Saturdays in Davie, Florida, and blow is everywhere, and I've been drinking through two shows.
Yeah.
And, all right, now I need cocaine for that third show. And it seems like I'm blazing. I'm fucking Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And
you're nailing it.
Every synapse.
Yeah.
And then you listen back to the tape and you go, I didn't finish one sentence.
Yeah. And people were just worried about you the whole time. There was concern in the room. I remember like doing the blow and then actually, you know, being up all night and then having to fill that fucking day before the next set of shows and literally not sleeping. It was fucking crazy. It was like doing comedy on another planet.
I never really had the constitution. I was always the guy that would pass out first.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And I was never I would do medicinal blow, but I was never a guy that was looking for it afterwards.
I was surprised there was no blow in the movie. I think it's probably better
off.
Yeah,
I was too. I thought of that afterwards. I'm like, there's no drug use in there.
That scene with the dad was pretty good. I think that was the most impactful moment in the movie in terms of the acting. Because you didn't say anything. When you were alone in the hotel room with the father who was, you know, on the machine and incapacitated entirely, and you were just looking at him, I thought that was very effective.
Well, I guess they call those choices.
Well, what were you doing? What were you thinking? Was there a mixture of anger and...
I was thinking about my when Bingo was in a coma.
Oh, yeah.
And having to watch her on tubes and not knowing if she's going to make it or not.
Right. So, and also with a layer of anger because it was the dad you didn't like. You must have added that in.
Well, I fake anger every night on stage, so it wasn't hard to do it.
How'd they get your eyes so puffy and fucked up half the time in that movie? Is that just normal?
You know, I didn't not drink for the production.
Right.
I just didn't drink while I was working.
During the day.
Yeah. That was an Outback Steakhouse. I ate at the fucking Outback Steakhouse every day because the hotel I was in was by the airport, and that's all it had. It had an Outback Steakhouse in it, and there was nothing walking distance, and it was fucking freezing in Chicago.
Right.
And so you'd get home with, you know, all right, I got, you know, 7 hours before I have to go back, so I'm going to eat again at the Outback Steakhouse and drink one of their stupid... you know, giant fruity drinks or something. Yeah, it's probably a lot of sugar in there.
It's just naturally puffy.
Yeah.
And that kid's he's a comic?
Yeah, it's a T.P. Mulrooney.
Yeah.
You know that name? Mm-mm. It's his kid.
It's a real comics kid.
A real comics kid. The girl is plays my long-lost ex-girlfriend that I hadn't seen in 20 years. Was played by my ex-girlfriend who I hadn't seen in 20 years.
She's here, yeah.
Yeah, she's here. She gave me a ride today. Yeah. Fitzsimmons plays my old comedy buddy that I hadn't seen in 17 years. And we did the math. I'm like, it's been 17 years.
No shit.
Fucking so many coincidences on that.
I thought Greg was good because he's like, he's that guy kind of. I mean, he's not a hack, but I mean, you know, his disposition lent itself well to that part. And that scene in the condo, I didn't even know if those exist anymore. But that whole thing was very good.
I think there's a couple. I was asking around when I was up in Chicago, like, is anyone still use comedy condos?
Well, I guess, you know, actually Lara, the woman who opens for me in Vegas, they had a comedy condo.
Oh, Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zany's in Nashville.
Still has a condo?
Yeah, it's a good one.
You know what the worst one was? That really never left my brain was you remember the San Antonio River Center Club?
Yeah.
It was a huge room in that horrible big mall, and it was impossible to fill. And they had, when they first opened, they had this amazing condo. But when I went back years later, it was this garbage house. And it was just one of those things where, you know, leather sofas. It's like, why do you have a leather sofa in kind of this kind of place? And it didn't look, it was nasty.
Dude. We went out and shopped for the Zany's one a couple times back and like filled it up, put like a brand new, I think we even put like appliances in, just did everything brand new in the kitchen because they had like, you know, three forks and no knives and filled it and went back there. None of it was there. None of the shit we bought for the condo was still in the condo. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know if it, the person who
you bought it for the movie?
No, just because we were playing at Zany's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we just thought.
And then just someone took all the shit?
Make up some karma for all the days we trashed.
Doing a nice thing.
Yeah.
So where are you, like, how are you feeling about stand-up in general now? Do you have opinions about the world of stand-up, or are you removed?
I'm forcibly removed. Yeah, I don't. I hate that there's, like, sides now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I don't want no part of it. I don't have, I look back and I think, like, how would have I handled COVID if it happened in the 9/11 Doug Stanhope era?
Right.
Like, I was very libertarian and very, like, I would have probably been anti-vax.
Yeah.
But at this time, I didn't care because it played into my self-interest, which is I want a reason not to go out on the road.
Yeah.
I want someone to tell, because if I do it myself, then I'm being lazy. I'm letting myself down. But if you tell me that I have to stay home, now I have a reason. So I'm believing you because it fits my own self-interest to believe that. And when I get vaccinated, it's because I wanted to fucking get from point A to point B. And if that's what it takes to get on a plane, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wouldn't do it. I mean, I'm never getting a flu shot ever because why?
Yeah. I've gotten them here and there. I'm not consistent with it.
Yeah, no.
And the COVID thing was, I think for me, it was sort of like, you know, I guess I won't die of it.
Yeah.
But people are. So if I can get any stopgap to that, it'd be okay.
I had a friend, I have a friend that's a ER doctor in Tucson.
Yeah.
That took care of Bingo, like saved her life.
Yeah.
Was solely responsible for her being alive today.
Yeah.
And so, and I've known him otherwise. He's done surgeries on me. He's like,
sure.
So he was my source reference. He goes, I'm like, how's it going? He's like, they say this is bullshit. Come sign the fucking death certificates. I'm signing all goddamn day. Yeah. I'm like, all right. I know he's a nonpartisan dude.
Sure.
So
you're like, all right.
Okay, people are dying.
Yeah.
And I do have that. I've been chain smoking for 42 years. So if I do get a lung infection,
it's going to be bad.
I'll probably.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
But then again, it didn't turn out that way because I did get it. And I was, I was post.
It's later.
Post vax, I guess.
And also maybe a later version of the COVID.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Like, I don't. How do you know if you have a cold anymore?
Well, what the real question is like, what are the protocols? Like, okay, I have COVID, but I feel okay. Can I, how long do I stay home?
But the same thing should happen with a cold.
Totally.
People would always say, yeah, I get a cold. I don't want to come out because I don't want people to get it.
Yeah.
And I would go, I get a cold. So if you have to go away from me. Then
I'm sick. Do with it what you will.
Yeah.
But I'm going outside.
Yeah. You probably don't take a drag off my cigarette.
Right.
Because I've been coughing a lot.
But this side thing, it's weird because it really does feel to me that there's pretty much only one side. And there's this tribal sensibility around, you know, what can be said and what can't be said, which is sort of founded in bullshit. And then there's like just comics.
That's what we have to talk about. I know you've had him on, Cliff Nesteroff.
Yeah.
Have you read his new one?
No, I haven't.
Outrageous.
It's you love it?
Fucking, yeah. I'm carrying it with me. I'm at chapter 7. It is so good. It's just everyone who says it's the end of freedom of speech.
Yeah.
I want to watch your face when you read this book. It breaks you through every time. Like, you've never had more freedom of speech than today.
Ever.
And he spells it out in such amazing detail, going back all the way to the minstrel shows in the 1830s through vaudeville. And you can't, like, you're going to get arrested for doing the jitterbug.
Yeah.
And fucking.
Just, yeah.
And it's so brilliant. And it's just such a shut the fuck up to everybody who's.
Yeah.
Pretending like your freedom of speech is.
To me, that whole position is fucking, it's becoming the new hack.
That was brilliant where you got the same three topics. Yeah. Where like,
There was a time, though, when if there was a hack joke that became hack, and I don't know if you felt this, there was this sort of impulse to do the joke that ends the conversation. Yeah. I will do a bit about airlines that will be the final bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe a lot of it is pushing people to become like weaker minds. If you keep telling them they're racist for saying something that's not really racist.
Yeah.
Oh, racists
sure.
will embrace it. I remember a comedian and I tried to do a bit about it. I even remember her name, but I can't pronounce it. But on Twitter, she just randomly I saw, she said, "I'll never meet a racist halfway." And you go, "Well, you know who will? Fucking other racists." If that's guys on the border and just he keeps being accused,
yeah,
racists will. I'll meet the motherfucker halfway because I can change his mind. People are stupid. If they're racist, there's something wrong with their. That means they're malleable, and I can turn them into a Doug Stanhope fan.
Yeah,
and make them less racist.
You can?
Yeah, sure.
You have that magic?
Yes, I do. I try to appeal to dumb people. And I think we're all vying for the minds of the stupid event. And
but I think that, like, well, that's also the problem is that you make them feel smarter in a relatively proactive way. That the dumb people that feel smart because they're reading QAnon, you know, they're lost to us.
Yeah, but if you get them into, it's the same theory as when you get hate mail.
Yeah.
And you write back, "Hey, I didn't mean to offend you. And
right.
I'm going to really think about what you said." And they'll write back, "I'm sorry, I was just in a bad mood when I sent that." Like if you're nice to them. So yeah, I think
that's the problem with anonymity is everybody thinks they're just talking into a void. And as soon as you go like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" You're like, "I'm sorry, man."
Yeah.
It's like that quick.
Yeah. You can do, you know, you can change people minds. By not fighting them.
I guess so. Maybe that's true. You know, maybe I've got to settle down somehow. But I've got Cliff's book because I'm going to moderate book events where I'm going to go to New York with him and do a thing at the New York Public Library for his book. I love that guy. He's great. Great historian. Just the
best. Yeah, I've been plugging his shit more than my own.
Yeah, it's not even out yet, I don't think, is it?
No, it comes out. You can pre-order it now. It comes out in November.
What's it called again?
Outrageous.
Yeah. It's great. I talked to him about when he was writing the book, we had a conversation about this idea of not being able to say things.
Yeah.
I can't, it drives me nuts, and I have a lot of things to say about it, but it's gotten me, look, I was always critical of comics, and I can be a dick, you know, but now it's become this other thing where there's, you know, these teams, and it feels menacing sometimes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed comedy as the same way people enjoy AA, even though they don't, all right, you've been sober for 50 fucking years.
Yeah.
Do you really need to go to a meeting? But no, it's a community.
Yeah.
And that's totally how comedy felt. And it feels like it's usually by design that they bifurcate people because that sells tickets
right.
where there's conflict.
Right.
We need that. So once they found out, someone hates your fucking joke. Any joke you tell, someone is upset about
sure.
it. It's just, okay, who's going to get the bullhorn?
Like, yeah.
Which we've found one outraged person, and we can spin that into people are outraged.
Right.
Oh, like three people.
Yeah, right.
but you're going to get clicks if there's outrage.
Yeah.
And I've made this argument, and you're my age, basically.
Yeah.
That pretty much everything that the doom and gloom, these are the fucking end of days. We've seen versions of it before. Like, there's nothing new.
Well,
like,
you know,
AIDS.
You
know, AIDS was fucking terrifying.
Yeah, sure.
People wouldn't shit on a fucking public toilet.
Yeah.
You would hover shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember that Schimmel bit? It's like where he doesn't like going to public bathrooms. I remember, and he goes and he has to shit in the airport bathroom. He's about to get on a plane, but he kind of hovers over it and he drops the shit out, and one drop of water went up his asshole. So he said he's on the plane for 3 hours wondering what's living inside of him now. It's something like that. That guy was funny.
Yeah, he was in Phoenix. He lived in Phoenix when I moved there. I moved there when I was, like, after 6 months of open mic, I started in Vegas, and then I fell in love with a girl and moved to
Phoenix.
Phoenix, and I remember seeing him in a supermarket. He was in front of me in line, and I'm like, oh my God.
Robert Schimmel.
Can I say hi? Should I say hi? Excuse me. Robert Schimmel, I'm Doug Stanhope. I'm a comedian. I just moved to town. He's like, oh, great. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
No. Like, I said hi.
You did it.
Schimmel.
You did it.
Yes.
But yeah, it is a community, and it does feel strained to me. And it's kind of, we're all a little bit competitive, but I don't like this team spirit shit. I don't like kissing rings. I never did. I don't like that there's, you know, that there's individual. They've created their own show business, and everybody sort of has. But I think
Los Angeles, it's far more prevalent because of the whole writer's angle. Like writing rooms. Like, you know, fucking straight white man can't get a fucking job in a writing room anymore, which is kind of true. It kind of fucked up.
Kind of, but it's not really, because, you know, the whole problem with that is, like, it's usually old white guys. And the truth of the matter is, and I was guilty of it on my show, is that, you know, if you bring in other points of view, you're only going to broaden the comedy possible.
Yeah.
You know, you get these guys that have been doing it for 40 years, writing just one-liners, and they know the racket. But if you actually bring a different point of view, a younger point of view, a woman point of view, an ethnic point of view, it's like, all you can do is get better shit.
But there's also firing. I know, I can't say names, but he was writing on some show, some joke that, like, not just didn't go over well. Like, he was like, am I in, like, Me Too waters?
That was just a
funny idea, I thought. And
he
didn't know if he's being paranoid. Or
what happened?
I don't know. Obviously, he. You know.
That's the other thing. Is, like, I guess that's where the sort of rubber meets the road around what you can and can't say. Is if you're in an employed environment.
Yeah.
That's loaded up with fear and hostility.
That's why LA, you feel that tension more than you do
else. Watched Larry Charles's new movie, Dicks, a musical. Holy fuck, dude. That guy just let it rip. But he balanced it. It's crazy. It just came out. It's crazy. It's the most crass, filthy fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. But he balanced it in a world of a real musical, and it's sort of a gay point of view that he's dealing with. So all the filth, you can't. You know, stick him with it. You know, you're insensitive, you're this, you're homophobic, you're that, because he balances it all out. But, dude, it is fucking dirty, and it's great. So when that happens, you're like, all right, it's still possible. You know what I mean? You can do it. You can do it smart. Corporations are spineless fucking entities. They're giant leviathans, you know, built with, you know, a bunch of frightened people. So, you know, when, you know, somebody gets nervous in a corporation, then a monolithic force in the culture shuts people down, you know, out of panic. But I think that, you know, most of the time, individuals, you can still have a conversation. But the fear I have with the divisiveness is that there won't be any conversation. And it doesn't seem like you're guilty of that. But I think sometimes I am. Like, I don't want to talk to them.
Oh, if I'm being smart, I know anytime there's a new landscape, there's opportunity.
Uh-huh.
So if this is like while it's still fresh, yeah, you can make money off of it if you're smart. And that's what a lot of comics are doing.
I think so.
They're tooting that fucking woke or anti-woke freedom of speech because—
I'm not seeing a lot of woke tooting, but I'm seeing a lot of anti-woke tooting.
The point is, there's an opportunity there.
I get it, but the thing is it has bigger implications now. because the culture is on the brink of this weird fascistic shit show. And, you know, and if, you know, anti-woke, what does anti-woke even mean? It's just sort of like, what lives in the woke house? I'll tell you what, Jews, gay people, immigrants, black people, Democrats, liberal, they're all fucking Satan in the big house. So if you're sitting there going like, these fucking woke motherfuckers, there's a whole political movement that's, you know, just, you know, maybe a year away from putting people in ovens. Maybe I'm being overdramatic. but if
that's
you're carrying
going back to, we've seen everything before. Yeah,
sure. Sure. I did something I might not want to see that again.
it's not new. Like, there's never been a time of an era where people are saying, hey, these are the greatest days.
Yeah.
It's always fucking doom and gloom.
But there's never been entire states on fire at once and, you know, and 140 degree temperatures before.
Yeah, that's a little bit new.
I did this joke, I think you'd like it, where I talk about these Republicans or the GOP. They were never pro-democracy. All these people that are like, well, you know, it's not a democracy, it's a federalist
republic.
And then I say, oh, so are the camps going to be a state issue? Because then we'll know when to leave. Just give us a heads up. But, you know,
I've always kind of been homeless as a comedian. I really, even starting out, there was no scene in Vegas.
But you're a singular guy. You're like some sort of roaming troubadour. You have built your own sort of not just world, but you are a singular entity. Like people in comedy, when you say Stanhope, you're like, oh yeah, Stanhope, and then a whole other thing. It doesn't even fall in the spectrum of mainstream comedy. It's like, oh, that's Stanhope's world. Stanhope.
Yeah, I don't think I get pigeonholed.
No,
I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff that. Yeah, I talked about that. I don't know if I got canceled because, you know, Netflix just stops playing your shit sometimes. Like, if you're not famous.
A week after. Yeah, like, I had two specials on Netflix. I couldn't find them. They premiered in 3 days later. I'm like, is it off? How do you, yeah,
and
fuck
they,
them.
Yeah, they, there's no notice from them as to why it might not be there. It's just
no, it's
not.
An algorithm.
And there's
thing.
A couple that I go, I'm glad that one's not on there anymore. Yeah, a lot of that stuff.
But yeah, that's because the media, there's no real mainstream media anymore. Everyone's just building their own
right
entertainment empires. And you know, and most people only, that you lock into one, you don't know what's going on in the other. It's not, it just isn't, the center doesn't hold anymore. And that's just, we just got to accept that, I guess.
And I think there's something great about that.
Sure.
Whoever,
you were ahead of the curve on that.
Whoever had that theory that if you have 1,000 fans,
yeah,
that's all you need.
10,000, I think, wasn't it?
Well, that are serious, that will buy any book that
you can
put
carry
out.
A life, yeah. Yeah. You can make a living off
exactly.
of it.
Exactly. And I think that it's great that there's that many channels.
Yeah. To throw your hat into the ring with a million other people and then wonder why you can't fucking make it work.
I'm going back to my roots. Like, after this year has really put a lot of things in perspective, and home being important. And I really just want to focus on getting the crazies. Like, I've always, you know, had suicide cases and psychopaths and mental illness cases that are fans of mine, and I like that.
Yeah,
like tragic figures. And so I'm sure you have like stalkers and people who send you crazy emails,
good and bad,
as though you're already in a conversation.
Sure. Oh yeah, yeah. You get those?
Yeah. No, I'm saying I'm taking yours. Oh, listen, there's someone listening to this podcast right now that thinks that Maron is talking to you specifically, and no. He's not. I am.
Doug is.
My podcast.
Hear him out.
Yeah, come to my podcast. Send me
called?
All your fucking crazy letters. Just don't show up at the house.
Yeah, I have one of those.
I had a couple, yeah. One restraining order and one literally, the cops in my town are so great.
Yeah.
Because you know them by name.
Yeah, sure.
And they literally picked one of the guys up. He hadn't been on my property. There's no reason to arrest him.
You can't do it.
He was squatting in front of my door, yelling into the security cameras, and they literally drove him to the city limits.
They did, like the Wild
West?
He
hitchhiked from Ohio. We knew he's coming for days because he's putting it on his Facebook.
Yeah.
Have pictures of him with a meth pipe and a Pabst Blue Ribbon and fucking.
Yeah. Yeah. So you want all of them. You want those people.
You know what? Send them my way. If you can afford Patreon, if you can afford crack, you can afford to get on my Patreon page.
Do you find that you help them?
I have a lot of suicide that have gone well.
Yeah.
Yes,
well, that's good.
Yeah, I had a Russian soldier just email me. And it's funny because I have a Ukrainian fan that would give me Ukraine war updates. And I'm like, this guy, you probably not write me back or you go to prison for I write.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to make a peace accord between my Ukrainian fan and my Russian soldier fan. If I can get them on email to make friends, like
get them on the start. On the podcast.
Yes, that would be a beautiful thing.
Well, I like that that you want to make the world a better place, Doug.
Yeah, just but with the two people I know, not with some fucking fruity.
You got to start. You got to start small.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, man. It's good talking to you.
You too.
All right, there you go. Road Dogg, the movie, is now on all on-demand platforms, and you can always, we'll see. Doug seems to be taking a break, but you should go experience the Stanhope when he comes to your neighborhood. All right, hang out for a minute. For Full Marin subscribers, there's another half hour of me and Louie talking about comedy in this week's bonus episode.
I try and think about what is my joke really saying. So if it's satire, if I'm saying something, quote unquote, bad, what is the reverse of that? Like, what is the message of this joke?
Yeah.
And am I okay with that? And I try and run every joke I tell through that filter.
Yeah.
And if I'm okay with it, then it's fine.
You're setting up this thing that could really go south.
Yes.
And instead of, matter-of-facting it, you kind of do an amazing turn of phrase where, you're saying essentially the wrong-minded thing, but the joke is elevated. So people are impressed with the oh, shit. You let us off the hook, right?
Yes, in some ways. You build that tension and then you release it, and that's what it is. Yeah, right. I love that. And, I have a new joke that's not on the special where, I lose them, I get them back. I lose them again, I get them back again. And it's taken me so long to have that confidence.
I used to say what that was.
What?
I used to say on stage, this is my system. I push you away just to pull you back in. I push you away just to pull you back in. It's a little dynamic I call dad.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I do. It just took me a while to accept those silences. I trim so much fat from my act.
Me too, dude.
And to just be able to say, you're going to lose them here. The next line's going to get them back. It's going to be okay. And that's something I've learned in the last couple of years,
To sign up for the Full Marin, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. Folks, next week, we have Joan Baez on Monday and Jeanette McCurdy on Thursday. Those were heavy. Anyway, here's some guitar.
Boomer lives. Monkey and LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere. Oh my God.